Welcome everybody here this morning. Glad we can be together on another Lord's Day to worship our God together. It's interesting when we read literature from the religious world. There are times even, I remember many times going to grocery store, to Walmart, whatever, and there's all these magazines and whatnot with the prophecies of Nostradamus and all these people saying that the world's going to end in this year, or this month, or whatever. All these foretellings of the future. And when it comes to biblical prophecy, it seems like those in the religious world and even those outside of the religious world seem very occupied with trying to grasp some sort of hidden meaning, hidden future events that are foretold in the Bible, and trying to relate some sort of present day application, draw some kind of connection here or there to say, see, this is actually happening, this is coming to pass. The bulletin article this morning is entitled "The Mistaken Prophecies." Not mistaken as in they were wrong, the mistaken. As in when people look at them and they read them, they take them completely out of context and apply them to whatever they want to make it either support some narrative that they're hoping to paint. Maybe it's hoping to support in some way they're trying to bring in support for believing in the Bible, whatever. But there's one particular passage, and it's actually mirrored in several other passages, that we want to talk about this morning. And it's actually within the context of Luke chapter 17 and in verse 32. In Luke chapter 17 and in verse 32, Jesus makes the statement, "Remember Lot's wife." It's interesting because in verse 32, it's sandwiched within a warning from Jesus. It's sandwiched within a prophecy. But he uses Lot's wife as an example to emphasize of the urgent nature of what Jesus was warning about. So the question is, what is it that Jesus is warning and the prophecy contained within it, and how does it apply to us today? There's actually a total of four places in the New Testament where this particular prophecy is given by Jesus. It appears at Luke chapter 17 and Matthew chapter 24 are two different occasions where the same teaching, the same prophecy is taught by Jesus. And you got to figure, in the 3 years that he's teaching and preaching, he probably repeated himself quite a bit to the different peoples that he encountered in these different places. And so Luke 17 appears to be a different occasion as Matthew chapter 24. But Matthew chapter 24 has mirroring passages in Mark chapter 13 and in Luke chapter 21. So between all of these four places, the same prophecy is being given by Jesus to teach people, to warn them about events that are to come. And so we're going to start our study in order to understand why Jesus told the people to remember Lot's wife. We need to start our study by understanding what was Jesus warning about to begin with. And we're going to do that in Matthew chapter 24. In Matthew chapter 24, this is a passage that many people are familiar with, both within the church, among Christians, we're familiar with it, but also people on the outside. They may not be particularly familiar with the entire chapter of Matthew chapter 24, but they are familiar with certain aspects, imagery, and words that are given to us in Matthew 24. So starting in verse 1, notice with me, Jesus, he went out and departed from the temple, and his disciples came to show him the buildings of the temple. And Jesus said to them, "Do you not see all these things? Assuredly, I say to you, not one stone will be left here upon another that will not be thrown down." The context of the situation, notice it's not just Jerusalem as a whole, but specifically the buildings of the temple. And Jesus, it's almost as if you can see in your mind's eye, Jesus pointing to these buildings and saying, there will not be one stone left upon another. It's all going to be destroyed. So Jesus sets the stage as to what the context of his teaching is going to be, even after they go to the Mount of Olives, because this is on the minds of his apostles. What Jesus says here is going to follow them to Mount Olives, verse 3. As he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be? And what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age?" They ask really two questions. They ask, when will these things be that the temple is going to be destroyed? They presumed rightly that Jesus was speaking literally, that all of these stones will be turned and there won't be one left upon another. So when is this going to happen? But then the second part of this equation is, what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? And they kind of put these two together, because the sign of his coming when Jesus comes, that will end the age. And of course, keep in mind, they have a very physical expectation of this end result. Keep in mind that the Jewish mindset regarding the Messiah was a physical warrior king who would come and wage war against the Romans, cast them out of Judah, and reestablish the nation of Israel as it was under David and Solomon. So when they expect this, and they expect this fulfillment, this is what they have in their mind when they ask, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your... when will all of this happen? Verse 4. Jesus is going to answer them, but he's not going to answer them in the way in which they expect. He says, take heed that no one deceives you. Notice the very first thing he's going to talk about is warnings about false Christs. How that there's going to be many coming who are going to say that I'm the Messiah. But keep in mind the spirit with which they're going to do that. They're going to be claiming to be that warrior king that was destined to fight against Rome and reestablish the kingdom of David. These are the false Christs that Jesus specifically is warning about. Take heed that no one deceives you. Verse 5, for many will come in my name, saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. And you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. Starting in and around 60 AD or so, the political landscape in Judea was becoming troubled. There had always been a kind of a tenuous peace between the Jews and Rome. But as you approach around 10 years and going in towards the destruction of Jerusalem, which came about 70 AD, or came in 70 AD, you had this continuing dissolving, this crumbling of this relationship between the Jews and Rome. So when Jesus describes what's going to happen, he's describing something that's going to be obvious, something visible. Notice he says, you'll hear of wars and rumors of wars. Because we know there's going to be a rebellion that's going to start in the later 60s AD. And that rebellion will ultimately lead to the destruction of Jerusalem in 70. And in the midst of all of this political instability and chaos, there's going to be people who are going to rise up and say, I'm the Messiah, I'm the chosen one, the one that has been chosen to lead our people against Rome, cast them out, and reestablish the nation of David. That's what Jesus is warning about here in verse 5 and 6. Verse 7, for nation will rise against nation and kingdom against kingdom, and there will be famines, pestilences, earthquakes in various places. These are the beginning of sorrows. There are those who read verse 7 and 8, and they conclude that what Jesus is describing is that second answer, that second question that the disciples posed to Jesus. What will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? People read this as the end of the world. That's what they perceive when they read these warnings, nation rising against nation, kingdom against kingdom, famines, pestilence, earthquakes. Anytime there's a natural disaster, people go to passages like this to say, it's the end of the world. Jesus warned, there's all these signs that the end is coming. But notice within the context of what Jesus is discussing, if you go down to verse, notice with me in verse verse 29 of chapter 24. He talks about immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, the powers of the heavens will be shaken, the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn. They will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. This imagery that Jesus uses to describe the same event is imagery that has been known by the Jews all the way going back to Daniel and Isaiah. This is imagery that God has used to describe events, particularly as it pertained to the destruction of kingdoms. So when Jesus utilizes this imagery in verse 7, he's not describing this huge process of this kingdom rises, this kingdom falls, and there's all that. It's imagery to describe a terrible, chaotic time. Verse 8, he says, these are the beginning of sorrows. Basically what Jesus says, it's going to start off bad and then it's going to get worse. Verse 9, they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you, and you will be hated by all nations for my name's sake. Many will be offended, will betray one another, will hate one another, and many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. But he who endures to the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness to all the nations, and then the end will come. It's interesting because as Jesus offers this warning to his disciples, notice how when he says in verse 9, they will deliver you up to tribulation and kill you. We read in verse 10, many will be betrayed. Verse 13, he who endures to the end shall be saved. When people read this as a modern prophecy regarding the end of the world, they start associating particular events to the things that Jesus describes. People who arise that people call false prophets. Times where people are betrayed. Times where this gospel is being taught and so forth. But remember what Jesus is describing. The entire context of the discussion has to do with the destruction of the temple. And with it, Jerusalem. That's what started all of this question. And when the disciples ask this, and they say, tell us, when will these things be? This is what Jesus is addressing first. He addresses their questions. He answers their questions in order. He starts with, when will this happen? When will Jerusalem, when will the temple be destroyed? And of course, they assume that the sign of his coming and the end of the age, this is all going to all kind of be clumped together. It's all going to be the same thing. So within Jesus' response, Jesus offers up imagery that they automatically associate from the book of Daniel, from the book of Isaiah, as being imagery of the destruction of a nation. So, verse 15. Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, and Matthew incorporates here, whoever reads, let him understand. Meaning the individual who understands what that reference is, going back to the book of Daniel chapter 11 and chapter 12, you will relate this and understand what Jesus means. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains, verse 16. Let him who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. Him who is in the field not go back to get his clothes. But woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. The church will have already been established for about 40 years when Jerusalem is destroyed. And so here in verse 11 and 12 and 13 and 14, when Jesus is referencing people who continue to be his disciples, these are people who at that point are Christians. He who endures to the end shall be saved. Keep in mind that the buildup, for 10 years prior to the destruction of Jerusalem, as that relationship between Rome and the Jews deteriorate, there's going to be added pressure on Christians. There's going to be a automatic association of Christians, primarily Jewish Christians, with Judea. And Rome is going to lash out not just at the Jews, but at Christians too. This gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world. By 70 AD, the gospel has spread. The gospel has been taught throughout the Roman Empire. And it is a witness to all the nations. Then the end will come. The end of the world, or the destruction of Jerusalem. Keep in mind what prompted these questions. The day when the temple would be destroyed. Having said that, verse 19, woe to those who are pregnant and to those who are nursing babies in those days. Pray that your flight may not be in winter or on the Sabbath. Notice Jesus acknowledges the continuing binding nature of the civil aspect of the Sabbath. Because at that point in 70 AD, the spiritual aspect of the law has been done away with. But these Judean Jews will still be acknowledging, especially those Christians, will still be acknowledging the civil binding element of the Sabbath. Verse 21, for then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. When Jesus says great tribulations, he says that this is going to be the worst thing ever. This is what people associate to the apocalypse. Okay, this is it. This is the end of all things. Because there have been terrible things that have happened since 70 AD. That's true. But Jesus is describing the worst moment in the entire history of the Jews. That's what verse 21 is about. There has been nothing like this ever before for the Jews. And the suffering, the tribulation that this group of people is going to face is going to be like nothing that has ever been nor will be. That would include the Holocaust. That's how bad this moment in time is going to be for the Jews. Verse 22, and unless those days were shortened, no flesh would be saved, but for the elect's sake, those days will be shortened. Notice Jesus brings out the elect. Those who are, according to God, right in His sight. Those who are favored by Him because they are in His grace, serving Him. We're talking about Christians. Not just Jews, we're talking about Christians. Verse 23, then if anyone says to you, look, here is the Christ, or there, don't believe it. For false Christs and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect. See, I have told you beforehand. Therefore, if they say to you, look, he is in the desert, do not go out. Or look, he is in the inner rooms, do not believe it. For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. This is one of those passages that gets plucked out and say, see, he's going to come in the east. He's going to come back to Judea. He's going to come back to Jerusalem. And then his presence will be shown throughout the world, coming from the east and going to the west. Notice what the attention is on. It's not the directionality from which Jesus arrives or comes, but rather, verse 27, it's how fast. For as the lightning comes from the east, it flashes. As fast as lightning, the way lightning just flashes through the sky. That's how quickly this will come if you're not watching. For wherever the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered together. Verse 28, who's the carcass? The carcass is Jerusalem. And the armies of Rome will surround it. We'll gather together, incidentally, and whether Jesus deliberately included the idea of eagles here, because an eagle was representative of the Roman Empire. They had it on their banners and everything else. But at the very least, the eagles are scavengers. pick at the dead bodies. And this idea of verse 28 is where the carcass is, where the dead or dying is. That's where they are going to be. And so Jesus gives them all these signs and all these wonders that are going to happen, horrors that are going to happen. But notice verse 29. Immediately after, not then sometime after, not many days or years after, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. If you're curious about this type of imagery, go and read Daniel chapter 12, verse 11, going all the way back to chapter 11 and into chapter 12, the description of the abomination of desolation is given. But in particular, notice Daniel chapter 12 and in verse 10, on the as it's being warned about this abomination of desolation, many shall be purified, made white and refined, but the wicked shall do wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. And Isaiah chapter 13 and in verse 9, behold, the day of the Lord comes, cruel, with both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will be darkened in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. Incidentally, Isaiah chapter 13 is within a context of Babylon. And how that this is now being used by Jesus to describe the destruction of Jerusalem. Going back to verse 30. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. This is one of those, another element that people take because they relate it to passages like 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. They relate it to passages that describe Jesus coming in the clouds. But even this is imagery Jesus takes from the book of Daniel in chapter 7 and in verse 13. I was watching in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man, coming with the clouds of heaven. He came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. And then to him was given dominion and glory and a kingdom, that all peoples, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion which shall not pass away. His kingdom, the one which shall not be destroyed. The idea of the coming in the clouds is displayed in Daniel chapter 7 as representing the Ancient of Ancients, God the Father, giving power and authority to his Son. That's what Daniel chapter 7 is describing, and that is exactly what Jesus is describing here. It's not a literal coming in the clouds. It is representative of power, of authority, and judgment. That's why Jesus uses this imagery. The Jews understood what that imagery meant. Verse 31, he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Even some Christians kind of get confused at this point, because this sounds an awful lot like the judgment day. This sounds an awful lot like how Paul and how Peter describe what the end of time is going to be. But please understand that this idea of the four winds, this imagery, the trumpet of the angel, this too is from the Old Testament. The idea of the four winds, there is a sense in which the four winds is used to describe the works of God. And at one point, Zechariah, God describes how that his people will be scattered to the four winds and how that they will not have a kingdom. But now notice his people are being gathered from the four winds together. This is the working of God, and he is accomplishing something that's being described. But what's interesting is we actually have our own commentary to this verse. In Luke chapter 21, verses 26 and 27, the exact same language is being used. But Luke, and in chapter 21, Jesus, the way he says it, whether he continued to explain what that meant here in Matthew chapter 24 on that occasion, or Luke is recording another occasion in which Jesus said it differently, Jesus says in verse 28, "Now when these things begin to happen, look up and lift your heads, because your redemption draws near." Your redemption draws near. He will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. What does a trumpet do? It designates a warning. It designates, pay attention. Something's happening. Well, in the context, what's happening? A kingdom is being destroyed. Power and authority is being upheaved. And notice verse 31. They will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Those people that had been scattered will now be one. And you think, well, that happened when Jesus died. Yeah, I know. But the imagery being described has nothing to do with when Jesus dies. It has everything to do when Jerusalem is destroyed. It is that redemption Jesus spoke of, not spiritual redemption, physical redemption. Jesus is giving them the tools to understand when this is going to happen. Everything is there. The imagery, verse 32, learn this parable from the fig tree. So Jesus describes the fig tree, how that a branch, when it already became tender, puts forth leaves. You know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that that it is near at the doors. They're able to see the signs. They're able to see the warning that the time is coming where Jerusalem will be destroyed. Assuredly, I say to you, verse 34, this generation will by no means pass away until all these things take place. This gives us the context for the warning in terms of period of time. This isn't something that's going to happen in 2,000 years or in 4,000 years. This generation will not pass until these things take place. 40 years from the time that Jesus uttered these words is when these things took place. Heaven and earth will pass away, verse 35, but my words will by no means pass away. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Notice how Jesus describes the faithful as Noah and his family, who heeded the warnings, knew what to be expecting. And when it was time, they were spared. But these others, because they didn't believe, and they didn't have any reason or any purpose to believe what Noah was saying was accurate, they just kept on doing their thing. And then all of a sudden, here comes the flood. Then verse 40 describes what most people refer to as the rapture. Then two will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken, and the other left. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. This passage is utilized to describe the coming of the Lord the second time that will end the world. And the argument sometimes is, well, Jesus may have been talking about Jerusalem before, but starting in verse 36, we're talking about the end of time. Jesus has switched for some reason. Start of verse 45. Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his master made ruler over his household, to give them food in due season. Blessed is that servant whom his master, when he comes, will find so doing. Now, I want you to take note of a couple of things here. First of all, when Jesus describes the lightning from the east, verse 27, for as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. That's a very important point to make. In addition to verse 17 and 18, those who are on the housetop not going to take anything out of his house, and especially the idea of the carcass. This idea of the carcass and how the eagles will be gathered together or gathered around it. That being the case, there, verse 28, wherever the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered together. Turn with me over to Luke chapter 17. We're not going to read through Luke chapter 17 because it's the same account. It's the same teaching from Jesus on a different occasion. The same warning, the same everything that Jesus describes here. Notice in verse 20, he was asked by the Pharisees when the kingdom of God would come. He answered them and said, the kingdom of God does not come with observation, nor will they say, see here or see there, for indeed the kingdom of God is within you. Then he turned to his disciples. The days will come when you will desire to see one of the days of the Son of Man. The exact same imagery Jesus uses to describe the destruction of Jerusalem back in chapter 24, Jesus uses here. For as the lightning, verse 24, that flashes out of one part under heaven shines to the other part under heaven, so also the Son of Man will be in his day. But first, he must suffer many things and be rejected by this generation. That's including his death and his resurrection. That's including the establishment of the church. So Jesus is not talking specifically about this. There's something else. As it was in the days of Noah, verse 26, so it will be in the days of the Son of Man. Verse 31. In that day, he is on the housetop, and his goods are in the house. Let him not come down to take them away. This mirrors Matthew chapter 24, verses 17 through 18. We know we're talking about the same type of thing. Likewise, the one who is in the field, let him not turn back. Remember Lot's wife. Whoever seeks to save his life will lose it. Whoever loses his life will preserve it. I tell you, in that night there will be two in one bed. One will be taken, the other will be left. Two will be grinding together, the one will be taken, the other left. Two will be in the field, the one will be taken, the other left. Here's your rapture again. But notice verse 37. They answered and said to him, where, Lord? Where is this terrible thing going to occur? He said to them, wherever the body is, there the eagles will be gathered together. Back in Matthew chapter 24, verses 27 through 28, this statement by Jesus was before the rapture part. So people say, oh, see, that's about Jerusalem, but this rapture part, this is about the end of time. But that doesn't hold up when you compare it to Luke 17. The exact same warning about the exact same thing, the destruction of Jerusalem. This rapture has nothing to do with the end of time. It is describing where one person will remember the words of Jesus and the warnings that he issued. They will be paying attention to the abomination of desolation, and they're going to get out of Dodge. While the other, they're not going to be thinking about it. They're not going to believe it. And so two men will be in the field. The one will be taken, the other left. Taken how? People focus, well, it doesn't say the one will leave and the other will be left. They will be taken. How will they be taken? What did Jesus say back in Matthew chapter 24? The angels shall gather up the elect. From the four winds they will be saved. How will they be saved? God saved them. How? Through Jesus' warnings. That's how. When we look at these two passages and we look at how prophecies can be mistaken, we see how easy it is for people to hone in or narrow in on one verse or one series of verses and not take the full context into consideration. So when we think about passages like Matthew chapter 24 and in verse 36, a passage that is commonly associated with the coming of the Lord on the day of judgment, but of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. Jesus isn't talking about the end of time, although that might apply as well. In the context, Jesus is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. This is something that the Father knows, because he knows all things, and he has established a set time when this is going to take place. And apparently he has reserved that to himself. Verses 40 on through verse 42, the rapture isn't a rapture at all. It is describing people who know the truth, and so they leave. They leave Jerusalem. They spare their own lives while others are left. What we gain from this also is that God's plan comes about without warning to those who are not prepared. That's why Luke chapter 17 is such an important aspect to this study. Not only because it helps us to establish the fact that Jesus, all of this is describing the destruction of Jerusalem, but also because there in verses 17 and 18, verses 27 and 28, because notice he brings up Noah. Then he brings up the days of Lot, verse 28. They ate, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they built. But on the day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven to destroy them all. Even so will it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. Why? Because they're not expecting it, because they're not paying attention. The signs were there, the warnings were there, but they're not listening. Thus, when we get to verse 32, beware or remember Lot's wife. Because this is not only going to be for the unjust and the wicked, people who don't believe in the warning of Jesus, but even for those who should be saved, because they were given the warning, but then there was a part of them that held back. As Rodney read in Genesis chapter 19, she was told not to look back, but to focus on where she needed to go, and she looked back. And she was turned into a pillar of salt. In Luke chapter 21 and in verse 34, Luke chapter 21 and in verse 34, again, this is a mirror text. But take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and cares of this life, and that day come on you unexpectedly. What day? Judgment day? Well, that certainly applies, but that's not what Jesus is describing. He's describing judgment on Jerusalem. For it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch therefore and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. All of this Jesus taught, keep in mind, assuredly I say to you, verse 32, this generation will by no means pass away until all things take place. And then finally, for Jerusalem, there were going to be signs of the end. And that's what everybody focuses on, signs. This is what's happening, this is what's going to happen, because the Bible foretold this is what's going to happen. With Jerusalem, Jesus offered signs to people who would listen. But time and time again, we're told that the coming of the Lord will have no sign save for the sign of Jonah. And that sign of Jonah took place 2,000 years ago when Jesus was resurrected from the dead. He spent 3 days in the belly of the earth and then was risen. That's the only sign given to this generation. No others will be allowed. In Hebrews chapter 10 and in verse 25, it's interesting that the Hebrew writer makes the statement how that we are to not forsake the assembling of ourselves together as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching. What day? Well, I mean, you can anticipate or be watchful for the day of judgment, but you can't see it coming. The day of the destruction of Jerusalem. That's what the Hebrew writer is referring to. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 13. At the end of Matthew 24, there is a pivot from talking about Jerusalem to talking about heaven. Because Jesus begins to start teaching about the kingdom of heaven through parable. He says he likens the kingdom of heaven unto. This is different language than he was using to prophesy regarding the destruction of Jerusalem. Now he's going to answer regarding the kingdom of heaven that is being anticipated and how that is not physical, it's spiritual. But in verse 13 of Matthew chapter 25, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. That is not in a context of destruction of Jerusalem. That is regarding his second coming. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and in verse 1. Concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. There's no signs. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. Notice Paul doesn't refer to the signs. He says, you shouldn't be caught off guard, because you're always ready. 2 Peter chapter 3 and in verse 10. The day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, the elements will melt with a fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. Therefore, since all these things will be dissolved, what manner of people should you be in holy conduct and godliness, looking for and hastening the coming of the day of God? The emphasis for us is that there will be no warning. You will not have... one of my kids asked me, so when we hear the trumpet sound, can people just kind of run and be baptized or pray right then and there and ask forgiveness for their sins? Because, you think in terms of chronological time, well, it would take some time for Jesus to come down, so would that give people kind of a little bit of a warning? No. To liken it to what Jesus described regarding judgment on Jerusalem, lightning. In an instant, in a moment, the trumpet sounds, the dead will rise, judgment. There won't be time to run down and be baptized. There won't be time to bow your head and ask forgiveness for your sins. When that trumpet sounds, either we're ready or we're not. The question this morning is, will we be ready? We extend the invitation to anyone who needs to be baptized, to anyone who needs to make their life right. Will you be ready for the judgment day? When that trumpet sounds and the Lord descends in the clouds but never comes back to earth, he stays in the clouds and the redeemed go with him. Where will we be on that day? The lesson is yours. If you're subject this morning, please come forward as we stand and sing.